Rich Kimble, Bruce Pratt. Time for Sports Lit 101. And happy to talk today about a book that, well, we've actually talked about a couple of times before, but today we're joined by the author who was a professional baseball umpire at the highest levels, 26 years in the major leagues, umpired more than 3,000 games, a couple of All-Star games, two World Series, and some of the most significant games in Major League history. He's the author of a wonderful new memoir, Called Out But Safe, A Baseball Umpire's Journey. Al Clark is with us. Al, thanks for joining us today.
It's a pleasure to be with you guys, for sure.
Man, this book was such an enjoyable read. I really loved it. And it started right from the get-go. You set the tone early in explaining your perspective on the game when you say, for every Major League game, every baseball game, there are really three teams on the field.
There are. You know, and people go to the ballpark and they expect to see the Boston Red Sox and whomever they're playing. But the fact of the matter is, there are three teams. The crew of umpires, or the team of umpires, we call ourselves a crew, are just as integral as the two teams. Now, we don't win and lose, per se. But boy, if you watch us out on the field, we move around and we give signs to each other and, my goodness gracious, we create situations on the field that if we weren't there, there would be utter chaos, let's say.
Al, one of the things about the book that I really liked was you had a very fast rise to the highest levels of baseball. You got to the major leagues fairly quickly, as umpires go. What do you think it was about your personality and your habits that allowed that to happen?
Well, that's a great question. I think that the fact that I got into umpiring, went to umpire school in 1972, I was a little bit older and perhaps a little more mature than guys who go right out of high school. It's not easy to be 18 or 19 years old and leave home, be on the road for six solid months in hotels, and not the best hotels when you're in the low minor leagues, eating in fast food places all the time. Whereas in my case, I went after college, and I had a couple of years experience in the workplace, actually. I was about 23 when I went to umpire school, and it was just a little bit easier for me to adapt to the stuff that you had to be mature about. The toughest part of the day, and this goes right through the minor leagues and into the big leagues too, the toughest part of the day is not being at the ballpark and walking on the field at umpire. The toughest part of the day are the idle hours when you're in a hotel room alone. And I've said many, many times that an umpire's biggest enemy are the idle hours that he has to spend. And if you don't use your time intelligently, they can really get to you. They can kill you.
You're a first major league crew. Boy, could you have two more different people to work with on your first umpiring crew, Bill Haller and Ron Luciano?
Ron Luciano and Bill Haller were as different as, my goodness gracious, any antithesis situation you want to be. Haller is the epitome of umpiring. He earned respect. He commanded respect on the field. He was a tremendous teacher. On the other hand, Ronnie was as funny as you can imagine, irreverent as you could possibly be. And the fourth member of the crew was Larry McCoy. And he told me early on, and he was right, if I listen to Haller and do everything opposite that Luciano tells me to do, I'll have a nice, long career.
Well, speaking of careers, your dad was a sports writer in Trenton, a big diehard Yankees fan. You've also proven to yourself to be a writer. You have journalistic experience and the like. Do you think that you got a leg up in understanding the game because you understood sports in a different way than maybe other people going into the umpiring do?
You know, you're really, really good. That's a great question and a great perception. We spoke around the dinner table as I was growing up about sports and sportsmanship and winning and losing. And me as a schoolboy athlete and, you know, that kind of existence, I learned how to win and learned how to lose and learned how to handle things a little bit better. And that kind of perception definitely helped me on the field in umpiring. I could deal with you know, emotions, the high emotions that the professional athlete endures every day, a little bit better because I just grew up with it. You know, and I was aware, and I was perhaps a little more patient than other guys. I was able to allow the emotions of the professional athlete to play out before I took control. And that proved to be pretty good for me in handling situations and keeping guys in the game.
Now, you also had some added pressure by being the first Jewish umpire in American League history, although it sounds like in the book that you had maybe more problems with that aspect of your life at the minor league level.
Well, the minor leagues, it was very tough. I had a couple of anti-Semitic situations in the minor league. I write about them in the book, but never in the big leagues. Actually, one of the things that I'm pretty proud of that can never be changed is I was the first and only ever Jewish umpire hired in the American League. And the reason for that, of course, is because there's no more American League nor National League umpires. We are just Major League umpires. Back in the day, we were hired separately by each league. So you know, that will never happen again. But you know, our game is an all-American game, now international. And I guess Stan Musial said it best way, way back in the day. The only race is the race to first base. The only creed is the rule book. And the only color is white for the home team and gray for the visitors.
We're talking with Al Clark here on Downtown. His book is Called Out But Safe, A Baseball Umpire's Journey. You worked so many big games. It's Red Sox Nation. I don't think I can discuss without great pain for me the chapter on Bucky F. Dent, as you correctly refer to him. But there's so many great stories. One of my favorite stories in the book is how in negotiations between Major League Baseball and the Umpires Union, Richie Phillips brought in a pretty big gun and caught people by surprise when he did that.
It's a great story, and I go into it in the book, and it's a story that not a whole lot of people, you know, know about. Richie Phillips, of course, met his demise with a terrible idea in 1999, the resignation scheme. But on the way to his demise, he was tremendous for umpires. One of the negotiations that we were in, and I'll make it as quickly as I can, the backstory is that Richie Phillips lived out on the main line in Philadelphia. And his next-door neighbor was Julie Nixon and David Eisenhower. And Richie became good friends with Richard Nixon. And during one of these negotiations, fast forward a little bit, Lee McPhail, the president of the American League, Chubb Feeney, the president of the National League, and Richie were doing some negotiating, and they couldn't. Of course, they were at an impasse, and finally, they decided that we'll let an impartial arbitrator decide, you know, the merits of the case of the negotiation, and they gave each other five guys to say no to, and it came down to the last person, and Richie had the last person, and he came up with the name Richard Nixon. Chuck Feeney got booed and laughed, and he said, "Richie, Richard Nixon could care less about umpires. Nothing could be further from the truth. You want Richard Nixon. If you can get Richard Nixon, you can have him." And of course, that played right into Richie's wheelhouse. He got in touch with the president, the former president. They heard the merits, you know, in a case Nixon did. Richie was asking, this was when there was an expanded playoff, and Richie wanted a raise for the umpires from like $1,500 per man to like $2,500 per man. And you know, baseball said, no, no, no. Well, after the merits were handled and metered out, Nixon came down with his ruling saying that baseball didn't quite understand how important its umpires were to the game. And I am not only ruling with the umpires, Richie said, Richard Nixon said. He said, I'm ruling to them a $10,000 stipend for each man instead of the $2,500 that the umpires were asking for. And I go through that in the book, and that is one of the greatest stories. And there's, of course, a backstory to it. But it's like the, you know, that's the rest of the story.
Well, I would just like to say at this point in time that I consider Bucky Dent to be one of the finest human beings in the world, and have looked up to him for many years as a Yankees fan. But it's funny, Al, you didn't grow up a diehard Yankees fan. You seem to have had a broader – your father was the Yankees or nobody. Where did that start? Did that start in childhood?
Well, I started umpiring when I was 16 years old. And I did grow up a Yankee fan, but I wasn't a diehard Yankee fan. I was, as I grew up, you know, I was no longer a baseball fan, because as an umpire, you really wouldn't want an umpire as a fan. A fan is invested in players, in teams. You hope someone wins and loses. But instead of being a baseball fan, I was a fan of baseball. I loved our game. I loved walking out on the field every single day. I didn't care who won and lost, but I loved being a part of the greatest game in the world.
Al, your career ended prematurely after what appears from my reading of it to be a colossal overreaction by Major League Baseball, when you essentially swapped out some first-class tickets for coach tickets and didn't immediately take care of paperwork. But you're very upfront in how you approach that. And you say in the book you were pretty close to the end anyway, but it would have been nice to go out on your own terms.
Yeah, sure, would have been. And I am upfront about that. I use that in my motivational talks around the country. No, I wasn't the first guy that ever got fired from a good job. I'm certainly not going to be the last guy. But, you know, it's not the fact that I got fired that's the hard part. It's kind of why I got fired, as you started to say. In baseball at the time, the umpires had a lot of leverage on the office and the commissioner's office, and they were trying to get it back. The commissioner's office was, and who better to get it back from and show everybody that they're in control, that if they could fire and dismiss a pretty respected umpire, I guess, with 26 years of experience, everyone else would kind of fall in place. And that's exactly what happened. I didn't do anything that other umpires had not done previously. But I was just in the right place at the wrong time. And they literally did it to the right guy, if that's at all possible. Because, like you say, I only wanted to work another year. I was pretty worn out or pretty blown out. 26 years, 30 years in the game. I was 54 years old. I wanted to work through my 55th year. And be done. But, yeah, I'd much rather go out on my own terms, but it didn't happen. So you turn the page, you know, you accept it, you turn the page, you make lemonade out of lemons, and that's what I've done. And, I was embarrassed when it happened, of course, but that's certainly not the worst thing in the world that's ever happened to me.
No, that's for sure. But one of the things I wanted to ask you, Al, is when you look at the game now, I've done two things that are very similar to umpiring. I was a traveling musician, solo act for a long time. I get the hotel thing. And I'm a ski official, and you know, when no one remembers who was there that day, that's a good day for us. When you look at the game today, do you see more histrionics, more posing and stuff than you did before, or is it just a natural evolution?
Well, there's two answers to that question, actually. Where the umpires are concerned, I think there's less histrionics, and I think that baseball has dictated that its umpires become completely homogenized and virulent. No longer are the personalities on the field. You mentioned Luciano or Dutch Renner or Doug Harvey or Lee Wire or Al Clark even. Today, everybody does everything the same way. And I think that takes some of the personality out of the game. It was fun to have, you know, nose-to-nose and jaw-to-jaw arguments. It let out a lot of, you know, steam for the players or the managers or coaches and for the umpire, and the fans loved it. But we don't see that anymore. I think where the players are concerned, money does a whole lot of stuff. And the amount of money that these players are earning today, and I don't begrudge them a dime of what they're earning. That's why we live in a free enterprise society. You know, you kind of earn what you can earn. But with that, they become kind of Teflonite. They think that nothing, you know, nothing sticks. They can do whatever they want. And I'm not sure that's quite right. But that's the way that it is. You know, with the bat flips and, well, the rules in baseball now have changed so much, drastically since my era. I mean, guys can't take guys out of second base. There's no collisions at home plate. You know, I mean, instant replay has made a big change in personality in the game. I don't know. Is it progress? I guess if you're a nouveau guy, then I guess it is. But as an old school guy, God, I like that old stuff. You know, and the game's going to evolve. The DH is going to be everywhere. Just best get on board with it because it's not going backwards. It's only going forward.
Al, you mentioned that losing your job was certainly not the worst thing that would happen to you, but certainly incarceration would be high on that list. You did serve time as a result of a memorabilia selling situation that, again, you addressed very openly and honestly. You made a mistake. You paid the price for that ultimately, and you seem to have come out on the other side of that as an even better person. How did you get through that, and what did you learn about yourself from that experience?
Great question. And you're right. I did make a mistake. I owned up to it right away. I didn't sell anything. To be clear about that.
Right, you didn't even get any money out of it, right?
I'm sorry?
You didn't even get any money out of that.
No, I never received a dime. But a friend of mine or a person who I thought was a friend of mine asked me to do him a favor. I knew it was wrong when I did it, but I did it anyway. A mistake. I proved to be, or sentenced to be incarcerated for 120 days. I went to a federal camp. The connotation of a camp is so wrong, it's ridiculous. There are no, you know, ping pong tables, and it's not a camp. But anytime one has their freedom taken away and you have to stay within a confined area, it's not fun. And I learned a lot. I learned a lot about humility. I learned a lot about that we are all the same. I rubbed elbows with people that I never thought that I would be rubbing elbows with. And actually, well, I don't want to say I became friends with them, but I certainly learned a new appreciation of a whole lot of different people. And I did use that. I did turn a negative into a positive. I got together with the warden in the prison, and actually ran an officials class while I was in there. And, I got healthy when I was in there. I did a lot of working out. I used it afterwards during my motivational talks, about how someone can, and we do make mistakes. And sometimes you have to pay a hard, high price for it. But no matter what mistake you make, you never should allow one thing to define who you are as a person for the rest of your life.
Absolutely.
And I've done that. I've created a situation where I learn from it. I talk about it to the extent, quite honestly, I was a commencement speaker at a college last year, and I talked about that and how we do make mistakes and how you can come out on the other side and be even better than you were before.
It really is a terrific read. Called Out But Safe, A Baseball Umpire's Journey. Al wrote it along with Dan Schlossberg. Al, great to talk to you. We could have talked another hour with you. Some great stories, but buy the book. Hear the stories for yourself from a guy who sees the game in such a unique perspective that we don't often hear about. Al, thank you so much for being with us today.
Guys, it's a pleasure. Anytime you need it, I love the, you know, where you guys are up in Maine and Boston. Can anybody not like the North End in Boston?
Absolutely not. Thank you, Al. Be well. Stay safe.
You guys, too. Thank you, guys.
Al Bye, Clark. Al. The book is Called Out But Safe, A Baseball Umpire's Journey. Bruce, that was great and a really fun read as well.
Yeah, and we only got to like a third of the great, and maybe a tenth of the great stories. So
Absolutely.
We should have Al back sometime.
Definitely. Next week, is Bill Nolan with us?
Bill Nolan will be with us to talk about Red Sox 5s and 10s, which is just great because it's not a book of lists, which it might seem like it is, but it's a thoughtful look at lists that might be lists or might even not be lists. And anybody who loves the Red Sox should have it. Anybody who loves baseball should have it. As you know, I'm a Yankees fan. I love that book.
Excellent. That's coming up next week on Sports Lit 101.